All right, turn to Proverbs 11:26. I'm hoping to get through two verses tonight, and I'm thinking I will finish up Proverbs 11 here in the next few weeks or however long it takes, and maybe then take a little break and do something else for a little bit, just to mix it up. All right, Proverbs 11:26. It says, "He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him, but blessing shall be upon the head of him that selleth it." Now, this is similar to the previous two verses. If you'll remember, we looked at those two where it says, "There is that scattereth yet increaseth, there is that withholdeth more than his meat, but attendeth to poverty. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself." But the difference is those two verses are really talking about being generous and giving, whereas this one is talking about something similar, but not exactly the same. It's somebody that has something that he could sell that other people would want him to sell, but he doesn't feel like selling it for whatever reason. So it has to do with selling instead of giving, but the idea is kind of still there. A person should be helping somebody out with what he has, and he doesn't want to do it, and in this case, he's getting cursed. So let's take a look at this. The first half, "He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him." I'll define the terms like I always do. To withhold is to keep from doing something, to keep in check or under restraint, to hold back, restrain. It's to keep back, to keep in one's possession what belongs to, is due to, or is desired by another, to refrain from giving, granting, or allowing. Which is, I gave that second definition there because that's really fits with what is spoken of here, withholding corn, withholding something in your possession that could be desired by another one. And then the person that withholds the corn, it says the people shall curse him. To curse is to utter against persons or things, words which consign or are intending or supposed to consign them to evil, spiritual, or temporal, as the wrath of God or the malignity of fate to damn. Hence, without implication of the effect, it's to imprecate or invoke divine vengeance or evil fate upon, to denounce with adjuration of the divine name, to pour maledictions upon, to swear at. So if you have ever read some of the old Catholic councils, I forget which one it was anyway, where back in the days of the Reformation, and they had all these anathemas, and if anybody says that baptism is, infants ought not to be baptized, let him be anathema, and they're calling like these damns and these curses down from God, from heaven, and which of course, you know, they're just air, because God's certainly not going to curse somebody for going against Catholicism. But anyway, that's the idea of a curse, calling the judgment of God down upon somebody, or attempting to anyway. So, you know, like GDU, somebody that wants corn and the guy won't sell it to him, and that might be the response that he would get. Not that it's right for somebody to do that, but this is what the verse is talking about. So in other words, a man that keeps back food or something else that is needed by others, which they are willing to pay for, will be verbally damned by them. So he's going to be verbally assaulted, most likely, especially if it's something that a person really needs and he's got plenty and he doesn't want to sell it for whatever reason. Now, decent people don't expect a man to give them of his substance when they're in need, but most people would expect him to sell that to them, what they need, if the person's in a position to do so. Now, I'm not talking about if some guy has, you know, three antique Corvettes and you don't have any and you just like to have one for a couple thousand dollars and he doesn't want to give up one. You know, that's different. But if you're talking about food or water, you know, if you had 1,000 gallons of fresh water sitting at your house and there was a break in the water main and your neighbor has like nothing to drink and you're like, well, you know, I only have 1,000 gallons and who knows how long this might last. Sorry. You're probably going to get some curses coming down from heaven, you know, from out of that guy's mouth. He's not going to be happy with you, especially if he's willing to pay for it. And you're just like, well, you know, I think I just want to keep it for myself. And we shouldn't withhold good from those to whom it's due when it's in our power to do so. Of course, this verse could be abused to where you could force people to sell anything to somebody else who wants to buy it, which, of course, that's not what it's teaching. But when it comes to needs, somebody's in genuine need, you have enough and plenty, and then you won't sell him what he needs, well, then you're coming under the condemnation of this verse. Proverbs 3, 27 through 28. Withhold not good from them to whom it is due, when it is in the power of thine hand to do it. Say not unto thy neighbor, go and come again, and tomorrow I will give, when thou hast it by thee. So, you know, the principle of this anyway is, if you have something and you could do it, you should do it, especially if it's owed to the person. And we should do good to all men as we have opportunity, and especially so to the brethren. In Galatians 6 and verse 10, even if you're not legally obligated and you're not bound to sell something to somebody that they really need or could use very badly, it's a nice thing to do so if you can, especially if you have extra, right? It wouldn't cause your family to starve by doing so. Galatians 6 and verse 10, as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. So selling people things they need, especially food, is good that we should not withhold. Right? To have more than enough of an item or commodity than one needs, and then to refuse to sell some of it to somebody else who truly needs it, is to exhibit covetousness and greed, and we don't want to be guilty of that. But I think the key word there in this whole thing is need. Right? If somebody needs something and you have plenty to spare, really that would be the rules here to follow. And this, the answer to this dilemma is the answer to many, and that would be just simply by observing the golden rule when it comes to selling people things they need if you have enough. Like would be in many other situations in life, you should do to others as you would want to be done unto you. Matthew 7 and verse 12, I'll just give you, there's a few different renderings of the golden rule. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12, therefore all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Basically, this sums up the whole Old Testament. Love thy neighbor as thyself, right? That's another version of this law. That the love thy neighbor as thyself was the Old Testament rendering of it. Jesus' rendering of it, the way that he put it was, whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them. Or, of course, everybody knows it today as, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, right? That's not King James, but that's how most people remember it. Luke 6 and verse 31. So obviously, if you were hungry and you knew somebody that would had some extra food that you wanted to buy, well, you would want him to sell you the food. And so if it's the other way around, you should do unto him like you'd like him to do unto you and sell him what he needs. Luke 6 and verse 31. This is worded just slightly differently. And as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. These are good verses to memorize. Romans 13 and verse 9 is yet another rendering of this in slightly different wording. Romans 13 and verse 9. He says, for this, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not covet. And if there be any other commandment, it is briefly comprehended in this saying, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. So, the whole law and the prophets, Jesus said in Matthew 22, are summed up in love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, mind, strength, and love thy neighbor as thyself. And if you keep those two commandments, you'll keep all the rest, because you're not going to kill your neighbor, covet his wife, or commit adultery, or steal from him, or lie to him, or any of those things if you love him like you love yourself. Unless you like having people steal your wife and murder you, and I don't think most people do, so. And then James called this the royal law in James 2 and verse 8. So I don't know what would the answer be if you're a masochist or something and you love to have pain inflicted upon you. And then you say, well, Jesus said, as you would that men should do ye to them likewise. I had a professor ask me that in school one time. I guess you'd have to go back to, your desires should be governed by the word of God, and you ought to not desire wicked, stupid things like that, and therefore you shouldn't want to impose them on somebody else, would be the answer.
Maybe he shouldn't use like the weird example to try to establish what is normal.
Yeah. It was an ethics class, so they always like to push the envelope and those kind of things. James 2 and verse 8. If you fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, ye do well. So if you want to just pick out one commandment to keep, just pick that one out, and then you pretty much took care of the rest of them. And if we don't, we'll be cursed by men, and rightly so. Let's look at the second half of that proverb. But blessing shall be upon the head of him that selleth it. So people will curse the man that won't sell them corn when they need it, but they'll bless the man that will. A blessing is hallowing, consecration. It's the bestowal of divine favor and prospering influence. Favor and prospering influence of God. It's a beneficent gift of God, nature, etc. Anything that makes happy or prosperous, a boon. So a blessing will be upon the head of the person. Now this blessing could come from the people themselves. They'll bless him, or it could come from God. God will bless the person that would sell of his substance to help out somebody else. To sell is to give in various senses, especially to hand over something, especially food, a gift, voluntarily or in response to a demand or request. And I just included that because I thought it was interesting how the definition of sell has changed, because that's the primary definition. It doesn't have anything to do with giving and exchanging for money. It's just to give. But then you go down to number three, and it says it's the chief current sense. It's to give up or hand over something to another person for money, or something that is reckoned as money, especially to dispose of merchandise, possessions, etc., to a buyer for a price, to vend. So it's weird that the only thing that we think about when we think of selling, to give over something for money, is actually the third definition, and the first one is just to give something, hand it over. Yeah, it's strange how words change meanings. But anyway, I think that number one definition probably was used prior to the King James even being written, you know, going way back in the Middle English or Old English or something. But so anyway, in other words, if we put the definitions into the verse, he who voluntarily gives up food or other things in his possession, which people are in need of, for a fair price, will be made happy and prosperous by them. Of course, he will prosper by selling it, because he might even make a profit doing so, but then the blessing of the Lord will also be upon him. Let me just give you a few examples here, as if I probably needed to, of people blessing the righteous for selling them something they need. Job 29 and verse 13. Job 29:13. Then I've got something interesting to share with you after that. Get to talk a little bit of economics, which is going to be fascinating. At least to one of us, anyway. Job 29:13. The blessing of him that was ready to perish came upon me, and I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. He was here delivering the poor that cried, and the fatherless that needed help. So kind of reading between the lines, but he probably gave them at least something that they needed, and their blessing came upon him. And then, of course, you have the example of Joseph, that he was blessed by God for selling people corn in the time of famine. And I'm not going to read the passage there, but that's in Genesis 41, 47 through 49, and then 53 through 57. you remember there was, he interpreted the dream, and there was 7 years of plenty, and then there were 7 years of famine. And during the plenty, Joseph laid up all this corn, and then when the famine came, people came to him to buy the corn. Now, it doesn't actually say that they blessed him, but the implication, obviously, is if you're starving and some guy's got a ton of corn he's willing to sell you, I'm sure Joseph was a popular guy in those days, especially in the beginning of it anyway. Now, even so-called price gougers who sell necessary goods that are in short supply for high prices should be blessed by wise men. Now, if there is a group of people out there that are hated by more people than price gougers are, I don't know who they are. I mean, murderers, rapists, you know, I mean, you name it. They are generally ranked higher in the eyes of the population than price gougers. You know, when there's a hurricane or something and these people are selling bottles of water for $10, I'm going to talk about that, universally hated. I mean, the politicians come down on them. The public just demands that they can't do this. This is just evil and wicked. How could you dare charge this high exorbitant prices when people are in great need? How could you do that? People despise price gougers. But I'm going to tell you here that price gougers are wonderful people, and they're a blessing to all of us. We should thank God for them. And the next time you find somebody that's selling something at an outrageously high price in a time of great need, go up and shake his hand and thank him, because he is doing the public a wonderful service. Now, that sounds crazy, right? But I'll explain why. If it were not for price gougers, people who are truly in need of something would go without, and people that are not truly in need of it would have more than they need. So let me give you, I'll give you three examples of this. For instance, hotels. So maybe you have a big sporting event in Kansas City, you know, the World Series or something like that, Super Bowl, and hotels jack rates up two or three times, right? So it costs, you know, $500 or $1,000 to get a room or something in a hotel. You think that's just wrong. Why, they shouldn't be able to do that. That's not right, right? Well, just think about it. The hotel owner, he doubles his prices during the sporting event, and he actually does the people that are in the most need, that are the most desperate for a place to stay, he actually does them a favor. And here's why. Because of price gouging, let's say that there is a family coming into town to watch the Super Bowl, okay? And the hotel owner is charging $500 a night or $1,000 a night, and this family has four kids, so they have six people. And normally speaking, when a hotel room's $100, they'd get two rooms. They put most of the kids in one room, they'd have one room, right? But when it's $1,000 a night, they're like, you know what, the kids are going to sleep on the floor, or they're all going to stay in one bed, we're going to economize because we don't want to spend that kind of money. And then guess what? There's a room open for the poor slob who's driving through Kansas City, just happens to be, and his car breaks down, and he really needs some place to stay. And it's a heck of a lot better to spend $1,000 a night than it is to sleep in one of the places that Austin was talking about on a sidewalk down there somewhere in, you know, some bad part of Kansas City. So really what the hotel owner did by price gouging was gave somebody who really needed a room a place to stay. Whereas if he would have just charged the regular rate, he'd have been sold out in 2 seconds. And then if somebody really needed a place to stay, there is no place to stay. Right, so the price gouger actually did people a favor. But I have even better examples than that. The water and the natural disaster. This is an even better example because this not only gives people that are desperately in need what they need, but it also lowers the price quickly. So you have a hurricane and a price gouger is selling a bottle of water for $10. And he's universally condemned. All the politicians are saying, we ought to put price controls. You shouldn't be allowed to sell a bottle of water for over a dollar. Nobody should have to pay this kind of money for water. That's not right. But he's selling them for $10 a bottle. But what people fail to realize is that by doing so, he's helping those who are most in need. Because if he sold the water for a dollar a piece, a ton of people would go out and they'd buy way more than they need, right? And you know, you probably would yourself, right? Hurricane comes in, knocks out water, you have no water, and you go down to Walmart and you see a case of water sitting there and it's a dollar a bottle. You're probably going to load up every case you can find and run out to the car and take, you know, a whole entire pallet of water home with you, right? But if you went to Walmart and bottles are $10 a piece or $50 a piece or $100 a piece, you're not going to be taking pallets of them out to the car. You're going to say, how much do we actually need to drink to keep us alive, I'm going to buy that many, maybe plus one or two. Right, I'm not going to buy enough to bathe with, and to wash the car with, and to feed the, you know, to give to the animals or whatever. Right?
I think I'd be using my life straw.
You're going to economize, right? Because the prices are so high. And what's going to happen? Then the poor guy that really needs the water, he's going to go to Walmart and he's going to see, yeah, it's $50 a bottle, but you know what? $50 is a lot better than dying of thirst, right? So he's going to have water to drink. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any water to drink because the first 10 people that went in there would have bought all the water and it's all gone. But now, thanks to the price gouger, somebody that really actually needs the water, he's going to have enough. And so are the other people because they're going to economize. But even better than that, by charging these really high prices, the price gouger causes people to economize, to conserve scarce resources. And furthermore, he also inadvertently, this is not what his plan is, but he inadvertently gives merchants from surrounding states the financial incentive to bring in bottled water from afar, and then that will cause prices to come down because he brings in a bunch of extra supply, and when supply increases, then the price goes down. So imagine if you have a hurricane, there's no water, and the government mandates you can't sell water for more than $1 a bottle. And all the water is gone in the first 5 minutes, right? Who in their right mind is going to rent, say this was in Florida, who from Missouri is going to rent a U-Haul, buy pallets of water for $1 a piece, drive halfway across the country and sell them for $1 a piece in Florida? Unless you just wanted to be a nice guy and help out. Who's going to do that? Nobody. But if water's selling for $50 a bottle, I'm telling you what, I'm going to be renting a U-Haul. I'm going to be buying a pallet of water here, as many pallets as I can for $1 a bottle, driving the whole way to Florida all night long and selling this water at $50 a bottle because I'm going to make a ton of money. But you know what I'm going to actually end up doing? Bringing the price down, because a bunch of other people are going to do the same thing because there's a financial incentive to make a bunch of money, and all of a sudden Florida's flooded with water. Supply goes up, price goes down, water costs $1 a bottle again. But if you let the government mandate it, $1 a bottle, they're not going to have water there for weeks until they get the electricity turned back on and get the water systems up, and people are going to be dying of thirst and so on. You see how the price gougers ought to be thanked instead of vilified?
But it's not their intent, as you said. They're just wanting to take advantage of the situation, I think.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. And also, maybe it's just natural that if there is a shortage of something, you're not going to sell your product for the same price that you would before, and it's all going to be gone. If you could make some extra money, then, you know, why not? But what it ends up doing is, even if they don't have any idea how the free market works, they're actually doing a service because they're making sure that people that really need it get it, and then they're also making sure that the prices come down quickly. Or how about rental cars? Rental car company that charges very high rates to rent a car at the airport at the last minute. By doing so, and I know a little something about this, by doing so, residents that live in the area can shop around the city and find a better deal, and that frees up a car for the poor traveler that had his flight canceled and needs to rent a car to drive home. When our flight got canceled, we went to the rental car places at the airport, and the only ones that we could find were, well, I had actually, the charge on my credit card was going to be over $800 to rent a car one way, Atlanta to here. Now, I took it back early and got the other days knocked off and all that, ended up being $246, I think. But still, $246 to rent a car for one day. But thank the Lord for price gougers. Because if that car would have been $50 or $100, guess what? It wouldn't have been there because somebody else would have rented it. But somebody else that didn't really need it probably went up to that desk and they're like, yep, $820. And they're like, no thanks. I'll stay a night here. I'll stay with some family here. I'll get an Uber. I'll do whatever. I'm going to do something else. And because that car was so expensive, I was able to get it and get home and get to church when I needed to. So thank God for price gougers. Because if it wasn't for them, I'd have been staying in Atlanta. I wouldn't have been back for church. And, you know, so anyway, the next time you see one, bless him. Thank him for his service because he is doing a very needful thing. That's one of those laws of economics that are completely counterintuitive until you actually think about it. And this is why you never want irrational, stupid people running things, because they just look at it and say, oh, charging $10 a bottle of water is bad. Nobody should pay more than a dollar. We're going to mandate a dollar. And guess what? Nobody has any water because it's all gone, right? So that's why it's important to understand how things work before you start making policy decisions. Okay, that takes care of Proverbs 11 and verse 26.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.